Here we are on the doorstep of Halloween, and LA is burning again. And in its own cinematic way, there's a soundtrack that accompanies the mayhem. The wind is howling, those Santa Ana devil winds. Outside the dojo is the frequent drone of water-dropping aircraft, copters and fixed wing, and sirens. And then Moose, official guard dog of the Take No Shit Dojo, he responds to those sirens, which I guess he and most canines mistake for the call of the wild. And I have my own call, a call of the weird and bizarre, a tale of murder and sex and madness. So stay with me.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
This is our third Halloween together. Pretty cool, huh? In 2017, I told the story of how I nearly became an accessory to a murder at Houdini's gravesite when somebody severely pissed off my pal, Tony Spumante. Then last year, we took a little ride with those hideous toolbox killers. And in that episode, I wondered why no one has taken all this Halloween horror house amusements to the next level, like maybe kidnapping someone and taking them to the very brink of death for a fee. Well, I guess I didn't do sufficient due diligence, because there's an entire strata of extreme Halloween horror experiences out there. There's one in Tennessee that offers a $20,000 prize if you can endure their full 8-hour treatment. They'll waterboard you, bury you alive, smack you around. There's another near Los Angeles, which includes cockroaches shoved into your mouth, being locked up in a box, groping dead animals and vomit. So who would find that kind of amusement amusing? Who reads up on a horror house, sees vomit and waterboarding and live roaches on the program and says, "Yeah, that's for me." Do they bring a little sriracha for the roaches? Put on something pretty for the groping? The guy with the Tennessee Horror House claims to have a waiting list that's 27,000 names long. What is the meaning of this progression from bats and witches and ghosts and goblins to serial killers and amputations and guys with chainsaws force-feeding people cockroaches? How did we get from Charlie Brown's Great Pumpkin to Saw? To be honest, I never liked Charlie Brown, and if some psycho had cut his outsized head off, I'd have been okay with that. In fact, in the very first episode of this show, in the December 2016 archive at thatlarryshow.com, I did in fact help Charlie Brown commit an assisted suicide with a song I wrote and performed. But really, the level of gore and sick shit in Halloween has reached really intolerable levels. Why is there such a demand for it? Has some sociologist studied this? I've read a lot of opinion pieces, but no hard research. Someone attributed it to the loosening of content restrictions on Hollywood movies. That could be a factor. But can you really blame Hollywood? Don't they just give the public what they want? Same as Al Capone, El Chapo, Coca-Cola, and KFC. None of it's good for us, but that doesn't stop us from wanting it. But it seems they do kind of ramrod the gore, don't they? One of my favorite movies of all time is The Wild Bunch, directed by Sam Peckinpah. And you really have to see the director's cut to make sense of it. At the time of its release, the studio butchered it so badly, it was almost nonsensical. A big reason for the butchering was the violence. At the time, it was considered outrageous and excessive. Studio Flax made the unsubstantiated claim that there was more ammunition expended in the filming of the movie than in the actual Mexican Revolution. But it wasn't just the number of blanks. It was the depiction of shootings. Realistic-looking squibs accurately mimicked exit wounds with fountains of blood. Guys didn't just conveniently fall over when shot. As in most Westerns, they grimaced in pain and tried to crawl away and coughed up blood and cursed as they died. They wanted to give the movie an X rating because of the violence. While many complained it was too much and operatic, what they could not say was that it was gratuitous or barbaric. Gunfights are not tennis matches. And underpinning all that violence was a marvelous story of guys past their prime, the brutality of survival, of politics, of men who stayed too long at an occupation that was becoming obsolete. Men left behind by changing times. So I recently checked out another Western, a thing called Bone Tomahawk, with Kurt Russell, you know, Snake Plissken, and some pointy chick who was mercifully not his romantic interest. And near the climax of the flick was one of the most insane chunks of gore I have ever seen. Some guy gets scalped. Then they stuff his scalp into his mouth and hammer a big wooden spike in to hold it in place. Then they turn him upside down, nude, and start hacking him in half at his crotch and tear him in two pieces by spreading his ankles. It was fucking sick. I'd kind of like to unsee that, but I can't figure out how. Maybe the transition from traditional Halloween to over-the-top gore has something to do with the digital age. It's a fact that vast numbers of people spend as much or more time in the virtual world than in the real one. I'm talking about anything involving a screen or a keyboard or a joystick. When you cum the time Americans now spend in front of any screen versus navigating the real world, it's mind-blowing. That has to have side effects. One of them is obesity. America's sedentary lifestyle is a huge factor in obesity. But nobody likes to talk about that. We've become a nation of watchers instead of a nation of participants. Sit, watch, click, swipe. The calisthenics of the 21st century. Besides missing healthful activity, we're missing an entire spectrum of authentic real-life experiences. People out in the world, doing jobs not tethered to a screen and keyboard. Well, after a while, they cannot help but witness real gore. Construction or factory workers or loggers or miners or truckers or paramedics or cops or firemen or military, sooner or later, they are going to see someone lose an eye or a limb or their life. And unless they're sick fucks, they're going to be repulsed by it. If you've ever seen somebody beaten bloody in a street fight, to a point where they leave the scene on a stretcher, seen it in person, in close proximity, not on video, it's a hideous, gut-turning sight to behold. Once you do, it tends to dampen curiosity and fascination with violence and gore. Out there, away from the LED screen, real shit happens, and often it's real disturbing. But this is a Halloween episode, and I would be remiss if I did not regale you with some tale of high-octane creepdom. Los Angeles has managed to attract, welcome, and harbor more creepy creeps than just about any other city. There have been so many over the years that even spectacular creeps manage to go unnoticed. Only celebrity murder a la Charles Manson or OJ can keep a creep fixed in the public consciousness. Perhaps you've never heard of the Sunset Slayers. Well, they must have had those profilers scratching their heads because these two were not your average serial killers first. They were a couple. Douglas Clark, who looked like any polyester-clad insurance guy from the 80s, and his girlfriend roommate, Carol Bundy, no relation to Ted. Carol was 5 years older than Doug. She was a nurse and had two kids and a bit of a weight problem. Doug was Mr. Ordinary. And Carol, she wasn't winning any beauty contests. So, Doug started bringing hookers home to spice up their romance. But after a while, even that got stale. So Doug flashed on a new idea. Wouldn't it be fun, he suggested to Carol, if he brought home a hooker for a threesome, and while they're all in a tangled knot of flesh and lubricity, he pulled a gun and blew the hooker's brains out. To which a flabbergasted Carol replied,
"Well, I guess we're gonna need a gun."
So Carol hustled right out and bought Doug two pistols, and it wasn't long before they put Doug's plan into action. Dougie picked up a couple of sidewalk hostesses on Sunset Boulevard and put a bullet in each of them. Then he decided to saw one of their heads off and bring it home to Carol. A trophy. So he takes the head home and leaves it in the fridge. Then Carol comes home from work, opens the icebox, and sees the head in it. What does she do? Well, she knew her man Doug, and she loved her man Doug. So she took that head out of the whirlpool frost-free and set it down on the kitchen table and grabbed her makeup kit and got to work. Carol rouged the cheeks and curled the eyelashes, fixed up the smudged mascara, laid on a fresh coat of lip gloss, combed and teased the hair, spritzed it with a little Aquanet, and presto. That severed head was looking mighty sexy for Douglas Daniel Clark. He admired it, thanked Carol for her work, whom he affectionately referred to as Ma. Then he picked the head up off the table, took it into the shower for a good rogering, as my British pals like to say. Doug had met Carol at a local gin mill called the Little Nashville. Some dude named Jack Murray who performed there had dated Carol before Doug. And one night, she was so full of pride about what she and Doug had been up to, she boasted about it to Jack. Jack wasn't as impressed as Carol had hoped. And he mumbled something about going to the police. Ooh, that put Carol in a bit of a panic. So she quickly formed a plan. Next night, she got to work on her own head, as she had on the dead hookers. Got herself painted up to entice, and dressed to kill in her best moo-moo. She returned to the Little Nashville, clapped for Jack's country crooning as if he was Elvis. Then she asked him if he'd like to take her out to his van for a little boot knocking. Well, Jack, being all man and smart as a sponge, took her up on her offer. She got busy on Jack. Once she had him in a sexual frenzy, she gut-stabbed him 9 times and once in the ass, and just to be thorough, shot him in the head. Then, of course, she sawed his head off. But she wasn't the tidiest housekeeper. She left a couple shell casings on the floor, along with plenty of Jack's blood, hair, and his headless corpse. Next day at work, something strange came over Carol. She found her conscience. She grabbed a fellow nurse and said,
"I can't take it anymore. I'm supposed to save lives, not take them."
Well, her pal dimed her out, and soon she and Douglas were in the joint. And of course, they rolled on each other. Doug's public defender was a drunk. Fell asleep several times in court, so Dougie represented himself. Carol, she pleaded insanity. Seemed plausible, huh? But then she changed her mind and divulged more grisly details of their murder spree. Carol died of heart failure in jail in 2003. Doug Clark, however, is in his 70s and still going. He is inmate number C6-3000 at San Quentin. You can call him there or write to him. I'm sure he'd love to hear from anyone. So what are you doing for Halloween? Watching your kids trick-or-treat? Going to a party? Netflix and chill? Maybe a haunted house. Maybe one of those extreme haunted houses. How is all this amped-up gore going to affect Halloween mayhem? Will it be a release valve, allowing nuts to get their fill of pretend horror? Or will it be a pump primer, leave thrill seekers with an emptiness that can only be filled by some authentic bloodletting and savagery? There will always be Doug Clarks and Carol Bundys. The FBI figures there are 25 to 50 serial killers operating in the U.S. at all times. Maybe one for every state, maybe one in your neighborhood, school, or workplace. I bet a lot of you right now are thinking, oh yeah, so-and-so is crazy as a shithouse rat. Bet he's got a crawl space full of Cub Scouts. Or maybe, just maybe, someone listening to this is one of those terrible 25 to 50 lethal psychos disappearing people on a regular basis. You just never know who you can turn your back on or take a ride with. But I think most of us do know. I bet all six of the hookers Doug and Carol killed had a creepy feeling when they got into his car. But they squelched it. Maybe even dopey Jack Murray did. But he was too horny to care. So wherever you are listening, take a look around once in a while. Take inventory of who is near and how close the exit is. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. That bonus episode will drop this week, a look at Civil War 2.0. Many, many experts say it's coming. How will it be fought? What can you do to prep? Go to thatlarryshow.com. That's thatlarryshow.com. And I'll post pictures there of Doug and Carol, some of their haunts, and some of their victims. It's as creepy as any Halloween movie. And while you're there, click a subscribe button. Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, whatever, so you never miss an episode. If you want to help us keep the lights on and get access to dozens of bonus episodes, signed books, custom recordings, and more, then click that Patreon button. I'll see you in a day or so for Civil War 2.0, and until that time, happy Halloween.